Okay, this is Buddy Fincher, also known as Ernest Dale Fincher, and his son Mitch. And we're going to talk about Dad's career in the Air Force and probably pick it up in France. So why don't you just tell me kind of what you were doing there?
Okay.
Some of the stories.
When I got assigned to go to France, there's a few schools I had to go to. And the first one was survival, and that was out in Stead, out in Nevada, at Reno, and it was a very exciting time. They give you classroom instruction, then they put you out in the mountains to survive, and they also put people out there to make it real, and they use shoot blanks, though, and so for most of the people, that was the first time they'd ever been out in the woods, and especially after it survived. And they gave you enough rations for one day when we went out there, but you had to stay out there 7 days. And during that time, there'd been thousands of people go through the course before I got there, and so there was nothing edible left. There was no creepies, no crawlers, and there wasn't any fish or anything. So you just had to gut it up and go. And they brief you on what happens when you go without food and what happens to your body. And we got to experience all that. And the thing that amazed me was that I didn't learn a whole lot, because I already knew if you work and you're going to get tired, and if you don't eat, you're going to get hungry. So I already knew all that. And but anyway, while I was there, and after the academics, they put you through an obstacle course. It's probably about a mile or so long. Now, this is out in February, and there's normally snow on the ground, but it just so happened that year that it rained, and it melted all that snow, and McLaren Airport was closed for several days because it was underwater. And so we didn't have any snow out in the mountains to speak of, but yet we still had to carry the snowshoes with us. And so in case we did have some snow. And after the academics, they put us through the obstacle course. And I'd had some students when I was that had been through there recently, and they were down at the Jet Qualification School. And my students was telling me about what to expect when I get there. So that really did help, because they said, whenever the lights shine, it says jump up and run and don't run into any of the trip wires. And it says when the lights go out, it says you stop and you fall down and you wait till the light comes on. It says you don't have to crawl through that thing. They tell you you're supposed to crawl all the time, but being how they was looking after me, they told me how to get through. And then like I say, you had to go through the mud and the water, and they had trip wires, and they fired some guns over us to make sure that we knew that this was all real. And so after you did that, they put you in a box. It was 4x4x4, and you spent a couple of days in there, and they interrogated you. And one of the interrogations, I didn't happen to follow my lot, was waterboarding. And they had another thing that the guys told me, that they can put you down in a pit that's full of water, and it's got boards on the side. And whenever you go in there, it says the best thing to do is just take your fingernails and dig them into the board, because when they shut the lid on top of you, if you don't stick your nose up, your nose is going underwater. And this is in February, and I was just thanking the Lord that I didn't have to do that either. So, but anyway, they would interrogate you, and they'd use the technique they told you about. And there's a lot of things they could do that would get kind of stressful. And so that went through, and we also had had to have some escape committees, and how do you run the operation in a POW situation. And I was a captain at the time, and so they selected me to be the ranking officer and the one in charge of all that. And here you have no communications. They got you in a bunker, and our bunkers were had water down in half of it. And we spent one night there before they put us in those little boxes. And after we got in the boxes, they interrogated us, and they'd had several different methods. And so surviving that, that's whenever they put you out in the mountains, and we were out there for about 5 days, and you carry a sleeping bag and all that stuff. And they tell you about how to get over the mountains. Now, they tell you you can't take any contraband with you, but says lifesavers can save your life. And so you can figure out some way to take some with you. And when you come to a mountain, if you haven't been eating, you need to determine how tall the mountain is and how much energy it's going to require, where it's one lifesaver or two. And you could take one lifesaver, and it's amazing how much energy you'd get from just that one little round lifesaver. And the thing of it is, you better be at the top when you run out of gas, because you are out of energy and out of gas. And so that went on. And like I say, I got to see how it affected a lot of other people. And we had one guy from New York. He says, the only tree I ever saw was out in Central Park. And here he's out in the mountains in the forest.
So did he do okay?
He did okay. And they have some people to... at one time, you go two by two. And the guy that I picked to go with me was a sergeant that had crawled through that entire... obstacle course, and he got wet, and his knees were so raw the scabs were on the outside of his long underwear. And so being as how I grew up in the country, and this was not new to me, and I took him with me, and he couldn't bend his knees, and we had those packs carrying everything we had, and I would lean him back on a log or a rock, and so he didn't have to bend his knees, and sit him there and take care of him. And then when it's time to go again, I'd lean him back up, and away we'd go. And I had to check him into the checkpoints, and they had medical personnel there, and so they dressed his wounds and sent him back out when we went back out. And then the last part of it, you're on your own, and you've got to spend a night and a day or two on your own, have to navigate to get to the next checkpoint. So anyway, that was a preparatory of getting to go to the 101 school up in Shaw, where I learned to fly the F-101. And we'd gotten at Randolph the first T-38s, those were the supersonic trainers they had. And I had just gotten checked out in that, and I had one instructional flight, and I took a friend of mine up to get him checked out in the airplane. And I'd already checked out just recently in the T-38, which is really fun to fly. It's kind of like a BMW. Everybody ought to have their own sports airplane. And but anyway, I went up to Shaw, and the 101... was an RF, that's reconnaissance fighter.
Is that the swept wing?
Yeah, they got a swept wing on them, and they're good out to about Mach 1.8. And the things landed at 175 knots, and it had a T-tail on it, and that's the one that had given them a lot of difficulties. And in one of the other sessions, I went through that. They call it a pitch up when the downwash off of your wings get on top of the horizontal stabilizer. That's when it did the pitch up maneuver. And if you was below 15,000 feet, you just jumped out because you wasn't going to recover. So anyway, that's the airplane that's flying. And fully loaded thing weighed 50,000 pounds. And the... The expression was it was designed by Republic Steel and Texaco, because it did burn quite a bit of fuel, but it was a lot of fun to fly. And the good news was we flew at 500 feet or less all over the eastern coast up there, Virginia, and go out to over the Carolinas and go out to the beach, and they'd give you specific targets, and you're flying at 500 feet, 420 knots, and you've got a map on your knee, and you follow that, and you go in, you take pictures of the target, you get a visual on it. When they come back, they grade how good a picture you got, and also the oral critique that you'd give of the site. And we had different kinds, but here you're flying all by your own self, so that was a lot of fun. I've seen some fishermen out in the lake face to face. I saw one guy jump out of the boat and went over the dock, and it was the same elevation as taxiing out, so it was down there pretty close to the water in the dock. And anyway, in combat, to stay alive, you've got to stay down to where they can't get you. So that was the purpose of the training, and I really enjoyed the training. And had two young boys, and my wife, we were up there. We stayed in a trailer park, and we had pine trees and a rope on it so the kids could swing around and around. And
so this is in South Carolina?
South Carolina, Sumter, South Carolina. And that's where the transition was. And the thing that was interesting, the Cuban crisis was going on. And our instructors were the first ones that flew over Cuba and found out that they were getting missiles down there. And one of the guys came back and says, "I've never seen so much arc welding in my whole life." And come to find out, they were shooting at him. And he had never seen that before. And anyway, our instructors are the ones that flew the reconnaissance missions down over Cuba. And after we left there, we went to France. We got over there in July. And we flew over there in a C-54. It took us over 24 hours to get there. Went up over Greenland, landed up there, refueled, and then went over to I believe it was Ireland that we landed. We didn't even get off the airplane there. And had a wife and two boys. One of them was about four, and the other one was about seven. And we landed there in Paris, and somebody came and picked us up. And we went to Laon, L-A-O-N, France. And Laon was the capital of France back in the 1800s. Mm. And so that was kind of an eye-opener. And didn't speak any French. And we had to find us a house. And so we did find one that was out in the countryside. And the house was didn't have any central heat. It had a Coleman space heater that was about 4 feet tall. And in the kitchen, it did have a gas stove for a cook stove. And the commode was downstairs. And one night it snowed, and the snow and the wind came in through the window above the commode, and it was covered in snow. And so it was a little different living on the economy, and I enjoyed it, though, because they'd bring food by every day. You could buy fresh vegetables at your door. They'd bring you wine by. If you had your own bottle, it cost you 7 cents a liter. And then if you bought it from them, it was about 11 cents. And so we lived out there for quite a while. And while we were living there, when I checked in, my first mission that I flew was on a I think it's Sunday afternoon. And one of my first student that I had when I started instructing down at Laredo happened to be in the same flight that I was in, and he was a instructor pilot. And so he took me on my first mission in France. We flew low level, 500 feet, from Lyon down to Lyon, France, which is down in the south and southeast corner down there. And we put on a flyby. And that was really interesting.
So what's that?
And what we did was in a two-ship formation, and we had a time that we were supposed to be over downtown Lyon, and that's probably probably about the size of Fort Worth. And so here we come in, and we're down there at our 500 feet. We make a normal pass, and we go back, and then we come in, and we do a high-speed pass, which was subsonic, and then...
Stop.
Yeah, can you turn it off?